So, Michelle, you just had your follow-up with Jen from Coral. How'd it go?
You know what? It was really good. What did we talk about today? We talked about switching from my current vaginal estrogen to one with DHEA in it. The intra, I think it's called Intrarosa.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm hoping it's going to help, like the vaginal estrogen help with the incontinence, but I'm hoping this is going to help with some of the libido stuff. Yeah, it was good. It was really, she was really thorough.
Oh, okay. Well, tell like, what do you mean by really thorough?
It's different from, I didn't realize this, from the Imvexxy vaginal estrogen I'm on. And so you have to use it every night instead of just twice a week. And some women get more discharge from it. And then we talked a lot about the discharge, which you don't need to hear. Anyway, yeah, no, it was really good. She went over all the pros and cons. And it was great because then, like, there was no pressure. I got to make the informed decision. And I'm going to give it a try. But it was good. She's like, here's what you need to know. Try it. If it doesn't work, we'll switch you back. It was great.
I love that approach. And it's so different from just being handed a prescription and told, yeah, good, like, good luck. Yeah. Or not even being sure how to take it or what to expect. That's amazing.
Yeah. This discharge thing was like, wait, what? That almost turned me off, but I'm going to give it a try. So no, and you know what? It was great. And I think also we, you know, then we started talking about my libido. Obviously that, you know, came back around to that. And she talked about maybe doing health coaching, which realistically I probably definitely could use. But you know, when do I have time to fit that in? I just, oh my God.
Can I jump in here and give you some of my unsolicited advice?
Yes, always, always.
Maybe with everything you've got going on right now, now's not the time to add in sorting out why sex isn't a priority for you, right? Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's a to-do for some time in January. And I'll just say it's okay to not want to have sex right now.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And you know what? That's kind of what Jean said as well. She kind of gave me permission to, like, not do all the things.
Oh, my God. That's huge. And that's the kind of care we all need. Visit coral.ca and use code TIP5 for 5% off. That's TIP5 at coral.ca. Today, we have a very special episode, our first male guest. We sat down with John McCullough, co-founder and CTO of Coral, to ask his perspective on perimenopause and menopause and how to get more men participating in these conversations. Because when men get educated and can support their partners, colleagues, sisters, daughters, and mothers, everything changes. This is Perimenopause. John, welcome. We're so excited to have you. And thank you for being the first male guest on the This is Perimenopause podcast.
Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Great. Big day. Big day. John, you're the chief technology officer and a co-founder at Coral. You are also the only male on that team. What did the men in your life, or do the men in your life, reach out to you to ask for advice about perimenopause and menopause?
Yeah, good question. So actually, as it happens, there are now three men working for Coral.
Oh,
so
fabulous.
I'm no longer the sole representative. Okay. So that's kind of nice. But yeah, no, sadly, I would love to say that yes, you know, me working in this space would have opened the floodgates to the men in my life and my friends. But that really hasn't happened. They certainly hear me talk about menopause a lot, but most of the time I'm speaking with their partners, and they just happen to be there. So I think we still have a lot of work to do, you know, before men really become part of this, I think. You know, but I do get teased a lot that, you know, my male friends will say that, you know, you seem to know more about women's health now than, like, your own health. Maybe you should, like, to yourself.
Yeah. What about the women in your life then? It sounds like perhaps they're asking you a lot of questions and knowing what you do.
Yeah, that has actually been an amazing part of this journey is, you know, first of all, and I don't know if my experience is the same for all men, but I'll speak from my point of view. you know, before I became involved with this, I was completely clueless to the existence of this. You know, I think like a lot of men, I thought of menopause as, oh yeah, that's the thing where they get like hot flashes from time to time, and that's it. Like, and to me, frankly, it sounded like how I feel when I get back from a run. You know, I'm a little bit warm, you know?
Oh. It's not like that.
But I know it's not like that now. But I think a lot of men, that's kind of the vision that they have of it. But anyway, to back up, yes, the women in my life now have opened up to me and started telling me their stories, their perimenopause stories, and there's women that I've known for 20 years that have gone through these horrific experiences, which I had no idea ever. And these are people I consider myself very close to. But they only started talking. We only started talking about it when I would, you know, I would talk about what I'm doing for a living now. And then the stories started to come. So that has definitely changed a lot in my life. I'm learning a lot in retrospect from all of my friends, frankly.
That's amazing. Can I ask, if you are with a couple and you do start talking with the female about her menopause or perimenopause experience, do the men in their lives, do they like get uncomfortable? Do they glaze over? Are they engaged? Like, are they like, it's probably different for everyone, but generally, what are you finding? Do they seem surprised or?
That's a great question. And I kind of wondered about that, but I still do. Like, it's hard for me to tell if, you know, they've heard this story 100 times or they're hearing it for the first time. I don't think that's happened necessarily, but, you know, the way that women talk to me about their menopause, I'm not sure all of them have had conversations that free with their partners, unfortunately. I wouldn't say there's any glazing over as such. It's not like, oh, this is like, let me go watch the football while you guys talk about this. That's not what we're talking about here. But yeah, there's definitely like you can feel a different level of engagement on the topic for sure.
Interesting. Well, it's funny because women always, once we feel comfortable, we talk a lot and we share a lot, as you're probably finding. You're probably not used to how like open women can be, but welcome into the fold.
Oh, thank you. But it's great. I love it, and it validates to a large extent, you know, me being on this adventure, which frankly was a little bit scary. Like, it's kind of scary to be the only guy, you know, in a women's world.
Yeah.
And this has made me feel much more comfortable that women are by and large, you know, opening up and they're not, you know, they're not thinking that it's freakish that there's a man involved in this, which is great.
I am curious because we understand you were kind of done with launching another startup and then you found out about Coral and here you are. So what was it about the value proposition or the vision that Coral had that changed your mind?
Yeah, I think it was more that I wanted a break from healthcare and health tech. So for context, you know, I'd been working on Dialogue, today Canada's largest telemedicine operator. For like over six years. And I felt that, you know, we had kind of accomplished what I wanted to do in that space. I got interested in that space because I wanted to see how technology would be able to kind of improve some of the processes and the delivery of healthcare. It is a challenge right now. Our public healthcare system has challenges with funding and all of that. And, you know, it seemed like an interesting problem to tackle of like, how can technology help with this? So my initial sort of pushback with the idea of Coral was like, it felt like it would be similar to that. But then things shifted. I mean, the most obvious thing was when I started learning more about just perimenopause, menopause in general, and sort of the it's it's I was going to say frustrating. It's not frustrating. It's infuriating, kind of the level of support that women get, and the how big the problem is, you know. And part of the combative part of me sort of got fired up with that. And I had some experiences close to home also with a partner that was struggling for a long time. And then, you know, when hormonal health started being integrated into her life, it just, you know, it's like a flick of a switch, like incredible. You know, obviously to maintain that there's work, but it just kind of floored me, like how, and I'm generalizing here, like how easy the solution was. It didn't seem like this crazy, we got to land people on the moon thing. It was just, no, you just needed to have people that knew what they were doing. And these solutions, you know, are super effective and do work. And then sort of researching the topic a little bit, like, yeah, seeing that women just aren't getting access to these services. Seeing women that are being, you know, they're being told by their family doctors, you know, that they just, you know, just pull up your bootstraps and come and see me when you're done with perimenopause, like on the other side of this.
Yeah.
In 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Like not 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. And that seemed wrong. Like, because the other thing that I really believe in is the whole idea that medicine should be more than just fixing us. I really like the idea of preventative medicine. I think it has tremendous downstream benefits also for public systems. If people are healthier, if they will use the system less. But more importantly, like, we deserve to live well. We deserve to be having a blast here on Earth. And it's not enough to just fix people. What you want to do is you want to help people live well, feel great. And that's kind of like the ethos of what our vision at Coral is we don't want to just fix you. We really want to, like, help you, you know, get to feeling great. And that's the bar that we set. So these things were, you know, there was the side of me that's like, yeah, this is really, you know, where medicine needs to go. And if I can contribute to that by, you know, I'm mostly the technology guy, so that's my contribution. But if I can contribute to, you know, moving, you know, the science of medicine forward in some small, tiny way, that'd be great. And then the other side is like, yeah, there's this really pressing need. There's this, like, really low hanging fruit, frankly, that we can address, and we can help these women that, you know, desperately need it. It seemed like a win-win.
That's amazing. Thank you for changing your mind. Is there something that surprised you most about women's health, women's midlife health, since you've started at Coral?
Yeah, I mean, so many things. As I said earlier, like, I was so oblivious to any of this, like, even existing. But I think one of the most surprising things for me is the community that's rising out of these shared experiences that women are having. I mean, we met at a national menopause show, right?
And you said the word vulva on camera and let us put it on our Instagram account. Yes. That's like, wow.
Yeah, that was funny. All my friends I told about this show, they assumed it was a show for professionals, like a trade show, right? And I was like, no, this is the general public. There's enough interest in this at the general public level to have a national show, like a couple of days, like hundreds, thousands of people go through. So that there's a movement now sort of forming around this. That was very surprising and delightful, obviously. But the level of engagement was very surprising to me. Like, this really isn't a niche thing, is kind of my conclusion.
It's not. And the everyone's journey through perimenopause and beyond is unique, but the challenges and the feelings of isolation and the feelings of not being heard, understood, cared about in the context of medicine and society in general, that's universal for half of the world's population. That is really significant context, I think, that most people don't still quite grasp. Even women who are struggling, they think they're still the only one, right? Until they're introduced to this community that's growing, but it's still really small relative to, you know, the world population.
I think what was great about the menopause show too, there was so much information coming at women, like this, anything you wanted to know about, there was information. And your booth was right outside of one of the main stages. So I think what I noticed was a lot of women going to these main stages and listening to these really important conversations, but then being able to come to your booth and be like, oh, hey, and had a little one-on-one and got to dive deeper as it pertains to me. And yeah, it was pretty cool to see what you guys were doing at the show.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience for us. And it surprised us in many ways. And one of the ways was just like how grateful the women were to be able to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And that really, like the level of like emotion and the expressions of relief. And that's universally, I think, with, you know, women's midlife health that I sort of very much underestimated is just how you feel when you start talking about this. And, you know, my partner also kind of went through that of the process of now I understand what's happening to me. I no longer fear that I'm going crazy. The level of relief that you feel once you understand that, it's palpable. We see it in our interactions with our members. We certainly saw it at the trade show also. And that's great, but surprising, right?
Yeah.
It's surprising. So it's unfortunate that you know, people are starting from that place.
Well, and that's what Mikkel and I are doing, what we're doing as well, because we had each other to kind of, you know, vent and commiserate and discuss and learn. But not everyone has that. And not everyone has access to Coral right now. And, you know, or the menopause show. So that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I just say we were great? I don't know.
Yeah. But you know, good for you. That's part of your journey, learning to not be self-deprecating. And yeah, exactly.
So John, just curious, do you have any advice for female listeners who, might be struggling to talk about perimenopause with their partners or with their colleagues at work or with their friends? Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I do not want to come across as someone who is going to tell women how they feel. Like, this is not what I want to do at all. But I can talk sort of from the male perspective. You know, as I was saying earlier, you know, probably their partners are just ignorant on the subject, as I was before being involved with Coral. Our mothers never talked about this, obviously. So, you know, we were never exposed to this. But I think a little sort of understanding kind of goes a long way. And I think most male partners, you know, are very supportive when this is becomes understood. So I mean, my advice would be kind of just don't worry about talking about it. Just do. Yeah, I don't know. Men just, you know, we love the process of finding solutions. We love fixing.
I was going to say, you guys want to fix stuff all the time. So what if you can't fix this?
Exactly. Well, but there's a way to there's a way to leverage that, you know.
Okay.
Use us to do the busy work, you know. Use us to research what solutions are out there. You know, we have members that have told us on our platform that, you know, they sit their men on us to like vet us. Like, are these guys quacks or is this legit?
Oh, really?
Yeah, for real.
Oh, fascinating. That's
we have men that's actually sign up, you know, their partners. So this does happen, you know, and I think that, yeah, like get your partners involved, give them tasks to do, you know, help them help you with the busy work part of it, and they'll be engaged.
I like that.
Well, certainly helpful for us. Well, as soon as you come to Alberta, it'll be a lot more helpful for us. Interestingly, our experience when we're at a pitch competition or we're working on something at the incubator and we have a booth or what have you, when that's happened in the past, the number of men who want to talk to the two of us, and they say, I learned a little bit about what you're doing. I think this might apply to my partner. Can you please talk to them? Can you please? Can you please? Can you please? Right. So when we're able to say, well, we could, but, or you could have them talk to Coral. That's amazing, yeah. Right? Because part of the challenge is, well, we can talk to them, but until they can find someone who can actually, right, medically help them and offer solutions. And it's really a challenge because, as you well know, finding a provider who is well-versed enough in perimenopause, menopause, and confident enough to offer solutions is really challenging. Mm-hmm.
It is, yes. No question.
Yeah. I don't even know what the Mount Sinai clinic's wait list is. Is it 18 months, 2 years?
Last we checked, it was 2 years. And that's, I can't imagine it's gone down. I'm sure it's only increased. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hear that a lot, you know, I'm based in Quebec and we have probably more private clinics here than elsewhere in Canada. But the private hormone clinics also have similar wait lists, from my understanding.
Oh.
Yeah, like even if you want to pay for it, it's...
Accessibility is an issue, for sure. That's working on that.
Well, you are, and you're setting a new standard of care for women's health, so thank you. It's so needed. What would you say have been the key elements for making that a reality, And what are you most proud of in that context? Mm-hmm.
Good question.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things is, you know, integrating lifestyle medicine and like life coaches into the whole medical process. That's something that we don't do. And it always felt like the right thing to do. And so we've tried that at Coral, and it's been like a tremendous success. It's really, really helped drive health outcomes. And surprisingly, there's been a lot of pushback to that idea. And not just pushback from other institutions, but pushback from our members themselves. Oftentimes when women come onto the platform, they'll be in a mindset of, well, I just need the medicine, you know.
Give me the magic bullet.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need this other stuff. I've got this, you know. And then they get introduced to it and they realize that actually this is super helpful and impactful. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you're lacking in any sense at all. It's just it's a better healthcare experience when you can address other things than just the medicine. You know, and menopause is not just pop a pill and carry on, right? We all know this now, or, you know, those of us in this industry. And, you know, the gains that you get when you rectify your hormones need to be supported with, you know, proper nutrition and all these other things. And having a platform where you get all of that, you know, without having to seek it out yourself, has led to really, really great outcomes. But unfortunately, there's a lot of pushback, right? We operate in an industry where we have, you know, insurance companies aren't sure they want to reimburse that aspect of the service. You know, corporate customers aren't sure that they want to buy that for their employees or their members. They want, they just want the pill part. Sometimes they don't necessarily see the value of the other components.
Give them 10 minutes with Nicole or Jean and they'll be like, oh wait, everyone on the planet needs this.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's been an interesting journey, but I think it's normal also. Like, you know, changing things that have been that have existed in a certain form for a long time. It takes time. It takes energy, and it's not. There's a lot of, you know, yeah. There's a lot of, I was going to say inertia. It's not really inertia, but it's just, you know, there's a lot of people involved in this. It's a system that, you know, where payers are all interconnected and they have their own processes, and it takes a while for that stuff to evolve.
I think too, there's a big misconception about the lifestyle pieces. And what I mean by that is, I don't think there's anyone on the planet who doesn't know that they should be exercising more and drinking less and eating more protein and. And so we have this, yeah, okay. And we either just don't worry about it too much, or we're naive about how hard, those are simple things, but they're not easy to do. And that's, I think, where the differentiator, the big thing that I've seen, and especially when Michelle tells me about her amazing experiences, having that coach who can keep you on track and coach you about those elements, I think we've all really underestimated the power of that and the value of that, right? Simple stuff, not easy, not easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have some amazing stories of women on the platform that, you know, come in thinking that the problem is this big thing, and it turns out that, you know what, you just have a severe vitamin D deficiency. Just take these inexpensive pills, and suddenly you're sleeping at night, and everything else kind of flows through that.
And here's the problem. That doesn't mean that is what everybody else needs to
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
Right? And I think that's where people get tripped up as well. Then someone online says, hey, just take vitamin D and all will be solved.
No, it's this specific person had this issue.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why you need the experts
to
be able to hone in on, is it vitamin D? Is it B12? Do you need some estrogen? Right? Maybe you need to be eating more protein in the morning. Like that, it's, you need the professionals.
And the care that you provide at Coral is so personalized. So much so that when I was on a call with Jean, we were talking about low libido, and she's like, oh, well, that's not something that, necessarily every woman would need to have a discussion about. But she's like, let's take some of your coaching hours and we'll put it towards that. We'll have this conversation. And then last week, Nicole mentioned that I could sync my Aura ring up to your app, which is magical. I'm excited. I'm also terrified because now she can see that I'm not actually moving that much, and I'm drinking. And so it's, you know, good and bad, but it is so personalized. Like, I feel like I'm being held when I'm working with your team. It's been really such a great experience.
I'm really happy to hear that. It is exciting also what we're starting to do more and more with the technology piece. One of the things that, you know, you mentioned the Aura integration, but what we're really trying to do is we're trying to pool together a lot of different like data sets that pertain to your health. And we're developing some artificial intelligence tools to kind of sift through that and find patterns for us. And really the objective there is to give our practitioners kind of more ammunition. AIs are really good at finding patterns over a wide array of data that would be very difficult for like one single practitioner to notice. But in the aggregate over all of our members, and all of these different data points, you know, the blood markers, the wearables, like all of this stuff that we collect, we put it to good use to try to, you know, improve these health outcomes. And so one thing that, you know, worked for you, the AI will be able to say, well, okay, this worked for Michelle because of these reasons, and these reasons might apply to Mikkel also because of this. And so these are patterns that, you know, say you both saw different practitioners, they wouldn't necessarily have had a hallway conversation, you know, about you too, because, you know, we have hundreds of members, but the AI can do that. So that's something that I'm really excited of about that's coming, you know, as we develop this technology, is really to see what are the insights that we can get out of this? Because I don't think anyone has ever assembled such a wide sort of array of data on midlife health. And I think midlife health is very complex. You know, it's not, I have a sore throat, you know, give me a prescription for penicillin and we're done, right? It's everything is kind of interconnected. So I think this is possibly going to be a really great sort of future thing.
I don't know that you guys, can you connect a CGM monitor to the app yet? Because that would be magic. Like if
Michelle loves her gadgets.
If my blood, like my blood sugar and my, or like, oh my God, if we could put that all together and you could spit something out at me that was like, hey, because you didn't sleep last night, you may have eaten this and now your blood did this. And now I would love that. So please.
Yeah. We're testing CGMs internally.
Okay.
But we don't have anything yet where we're leveraging that, but it's
coming soon.
Yeah.
And for our listeners who aren't chief technology officers or gadget geeks like Michelle, CGM is a continuous glucose monitor, I think very, very cool. I have a thought just for some of our listeners who might be a little paranoid about their data and their health data. You know, as the chief technology officer, obviously you have things in place to protect privacy and to respect the acronym has left my brain, but there are rules and regulations. Maybe you could just give us a little blurb about that, because I know I still have some friends who are pretty reluctant in the context of sharing things, you know, online kind of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a totally fair point. So in Canada, the rules for data privacy surrounding patient health information are some of the strictest in the world, and we abide by absolutely all of that. We have aspirations one day of bringing our platform beyond the Canadian border. So we've really, the whole privacy framework that we've put in place is a worldwide. So we basically took the most stringent regulations everywhere and then, you know, added some. It's frankly, the data that women are sharing is extremely personal, right? As custodians of that, we need to just, the utmost care is put on that. We make sure that everyone that works for us is accountable for that, because it's not just, you know, it's not just the systems. We secure the systems with all of the state-of-the-art gadgets that you can imagine. But there's also, you know, the data is flowing through individuals. You know, your coaches are looking at some of it, your nurses are looking at some of it. And so there's the human element, and, you know, we make sure that we have really, really solid training programs for that. We for real, like, talk about data privacy every Friday at our weekly meeting.
Oh, wow.
And it's something that we take extremely seriously. We need, you know, we're a startup, right? We don't really have a reputation yet. We need to build that. We need to build trust. Mm-hmm. You know, we're asking so much of women, right? We're asking them to bear their souls in the form of the data they're sharing with us. So we really, really have to take good care of that. And that's what we aspire to.
Amazing.
Amazing. I love it. John, question we ask all of our guests, and it's going to be really interesting to come to hear your perspective on this, but what is the one thing that you want every man to know about perimenopause?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of touched on this already, but, you know, it's a major transition for women. This is not like a minor thing. It affects women to varying degrees, of course, but it's still a major transition in their lives. And for the longest time, they've been told, or it's been implied, that they have to do this alone. And you know, what I'd like men to know is that no, that is not true. Like, they need a support system, and they're finding it, you know, in these communities like we talked about, but they also need to find it at home with their partners. And so, you know, my advice to men is, Like, don't wait for your partners to talk to you. What I would tell men is ask them, ask your partners, hey, you know, have you read up on perimenopause? Do you like, just open the door, make sure that when the time is right for her to talk about it, she knows that she can come to you, because it's not a taboo thing. It's not a thing that's going to gross you out. It's a thing that you're curious and you're there, you're available, you're ready to support. I think that would be my number one piece of advice. Educate yourself, make sure your partner knows that, you know, your door is open to conversations about this.
Amazing. Don't say, hey, you're acting crazy. Maybe it's perimenopause.
No.
But gentler than that.
Yes.
Yeah. Fair. I love that. Thank you. That was amazing.
Oh, thank you. It was great to be here.
Thank you, John. Great to have you. Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.